We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon. This is Christine Fox with CETA. I'm CETA's Deputy Executive Director and co-author of CETA's latest work, Navigating the Digital Shift, Broadening Learning Opportunities for Students. We are so happy to have you here today on this webinar with EdWeb, and we've given the tagline here, Quality Learning Connections in the Digital Age. I'm excited to have Elizabeth James with us. She's from the Idaho State Department of Education, and her role is Curricular Materials Coordinator. And later on today, she will share the process in Idaho of how they support districts by reviewing instructional materials at the state level. And then to provide the district perspective, we have Dr. Bart Rocco, Superintendent of Schools at Elizabeth Ford School District. And his softball team is about to win the championship, we believe.
We hope.
And we're excited to have him here to share their digital transformation in Elizabeth Ford School District in Pennsylvania. So I will go ahead and let our presenters off the hook for a few minutes as I share more about CETA as well as coordinating the webinar and then about our new work. So for those of you that are here to obtain continuing education credits, you can make sure to do so. If you logged in with the email address that you registered, you will automatically receive that certification. If you are watching the archive, you will have to take the CE quiz. So you can always access those certificates via the archives and see all of the resources in CETA's EdWeb community, which is titled edweb.net/digital-content. And here's a little plug for that community specifically. So we try to have conversations both in advance as well as after the event. So we did our poll and we see that we have majority of teachers, but then a range of leaders from across the country, including quite a few higher ed researchers, as well as librarians and media specialists and students, and then international guests. So we're happy to have you here. We would like to thank the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for their support of CETA's research and practice on the implementation of digital instructional materials. And we're happy to say that Future Ready Schools was a partner specifically for this webinar, sharing about this work. And Elizabeth Ford School District in Pennsylvania is a Future Ready District. And so we're happy to have them here to share more about what they're doing and their digital transformation. So we've just done the welcome and introductions, and next I will provide an overview of our Navigating the Digital Shift 2018. And then, as I mentioned, we'll have the state perspective from Idaho, the district perspective from Elizabeth Ford, and then we'll have some Q&A and discussion. So a little bit about CETA. For those of you not familiar with CETA, we are a nonprofit organization. Our members are state departments of education, and we serve and support the leaders that participate in digital learning opportunities. So that's typically across the agency. And our goal is to build the capacity of state and national leaders to improve education through technology, policy, and practice. We provide advocacy opportunities. We provide professional learning for state leaders who are often the ones giving PD around their states. States have the chance to coordinate with one another, and we also engage in public-private partnerships. As I mentioned, CETA members are state leaders, and we have members from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, the Virgin Islands, Guam, and American Samoa. And you can learn more on our website and to see who those contacts are. In addition, we have CETA affiliates. So we have four categories of affiliates, statewide or regional membership associations. In Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Intermediate Units are a CETA affiliate. We also have higher education, international, and district affiliates. So if you want to learn more about that, you can also see that on CETA's website. And finally, we do collaborate and have a private sector partner program so that our members who can engage and work with the private sector to best move digital resources and services forward in the K-12 environment. Some of you may be familiar with CETA's previous resources that we've published, including our DMAPS. It's dmaps.ceta.org that was published originally in 2015, and we've updated that site twice with state policies and practices around instructional materials implementation, around procurement, as well as vetting practices. We also, last fall, published the state procurement case studies, analysis of four states and how they go through the procurement process related to instructional materials. And then this is our third iteration of navigating the digital shift. And on a separate topic, we also have publications around broadband as well as interoperability. So this is a little about me, and I will just share that my beginnings in education were as a third grade classroom teacher. I was also an ESOL teacher and ESOL coordinator in South Florida. And then I worked as a reading coach in New York and New Jersey. And I've been with CETA 14 years, mostly facilitating our research and resource development, as well as coordinating the professional learning for members. So here we are, navigating the digital shift, broadening student learning opportunities. This project, again, is the third iteration of this work, and it has been a project that we have worked through over the last 6 to 8 months. We connect with state digital learning leaders, as well as leaders from the state instructional materials teams, which Elizabeth is one of those in Idaho. The State Instructional Materials Review Association, SIMRA, is a CETA affiliate, and they have been instrumental in supporting all of our work around this shift to digital. We also have a partnership with the AIM Center, which is a group of leaders supporting the process for accessible educational materials, and then leaders from the private sector as well were able to participate in this process, both in person at our events last fall, as well as via webinars and sharing in Google Docs. So just to set the stage here, we at CETA, as well as our members and the other leaders, believe that the quality of instructional materials is so critical. As noted here by the Brookings Institutes, the evidence around the choice and importance of instructional materials can have as large of an effect size as do teacher effectiveness and other considerations. So we take this very seriously, and we know that there is such a variety of materials available, both full course and supplemental. It is a challenge to navigate as a teacher or administrator to make the best choices, and we want to try to support that as best possible by highlighting states that are leading in this way and districts that have found the best process or effective processes to implement digital materials. So in setting the stage, we know that you cannot just jump to buying devices and digital versions of textbooks. So we wanted to remind everyone that there are essential conditions. CETA does publish some. The ISTE organization also has a very robust set of essential conditions for digital learning. But some of those, as you may know, would be the equity of access, both in school and at home, the importance of state leadership in this process, accessibility for all students, interoperability considerations so that all of these tools and resources are working together, and then finally, the importance of student data privacy, which we know is a hot topic right now in the news. So highlighting in this report, we do include multiple aspects, and it is sprinkled throughout the report. So we highlight state leadership, as I've mentioned, their specific data sets, and then we have some key findings, examples of what states are doing, examples of what districts are doing, and then considerations for next steps for everyone. Most critical is to CETA and is the fact that state policies and practices really do support the transformation of digital learning. Most states, or really all states in some way, shape, or form, are local control, and the schools and districts can make the final decisions. But the concept of states being able to provide leadership around curation, selection, procurement, and funding really is critical to supporting the schools and districts themselves, especially when we think about smaller districts or rural areas where they don't have the same level of resources. The data sets for this report came from CETA's website, dmaps.ceta.org. This is an interactive online database where you can access specific state policies and practices, and you can also view national trends. So we have a previous EdWeb webinar on this particular tool, but that's just some information about where the data sets came from. We launched the refresh of that in March of 2018, and so what you see now should be the most accurate data sets. So in this infographic, we highlight some of the key findings when we did analysis of the data. And as you can see, there has been an increase in the number of states that are including digital instructional materials as part of their definition of instructional materials. There's an increase of states with accessibility policies and practices, which is nice to see as there are so many students. And oftentimes, accessibility policies and practices can then support accessible tools, which oftentimes support students even if they don't have a label or a specific disability, but those tools can be helpful to all. There are 15 states with dedicated funding to digital instructional materials. And new this year, we highlighted and asked states about inclement weather policies. So we had not reported on this before, but 11 states indicate they have policies around the option for a district to include digital learning days per se, or work from home days when there are weather issues. Most typically this has been snow days. And the interesting part of that is in many cases, then this is promoting the use of digital because the students need a device and clearly they need access to the content outside of school as well. There are 26 states with state resource repositories. Some of those repositories include OER, but are not exclusive to OER. A few are exclusive open educational resource repositories. So that number has increased slightly. And the great part about DMAPS is you can actually access those state resource repositories. And in most cases of those 26, they are open and available to the public. And so whether or not you're from that state, they are aligned to standards and vetted, and you have access to additional resources. Well, Elizabeth is going to go into more detail about Idaho's specific review process, but I wanted to highlight the fact that when states have a review process, they're really providing a service in most cases to the schools and districts. There are only a handful of states that require the districts to purchase from the adoption list. Typically, there is an option. There may be some rules and regulations around the option of buying materials that are not part of their adoption list, if the state has a process. Not all states do. And there are 19 states that have a state master contract. So then once they've vetted the materials, the information, the state then helps to negotiate pricing, and the districts can buy through the state and typically are able to save because of that collaboration. So just some quick examples here. Kentucky also has an adoption process, and they publish and provide a review of materials on a regular cycle. And as part of that, they then provide the LEAs the option to purchase those materials. They typically, the districts purchase those materials, but they also have the option to select alternate materials as long as they go through the state policies and practices around that. Oregon recently published their Student Information Protection Act, and this is a law that is requiring companies to have reasonable security measures in place. So, and they also have to delete the information about their students if they have gathered information on the school's request. So Oregon is kind of supporting, it's not the only state with student data privacy laws, but that is one of the newer ones. In Texas, they have technology lending grants where they support the purchase of materials, devices, and materials as well. And then finally, the state of Washington does have a portal of vetted OER content, which was one of the first OER state initiatives that launched several years ago. CETA focused on four next steps as part of this work. As we analyzed the data and discussed with state leaders, what were the important things to highlight? One is the importance of professional learning, and I probably preaching to the choir here, considering the audience, that how important it is for educators to understand not only the boxes and wires and how the tool works, but how to best integrate digital opportunities within their lessons. And then the interoperability of instruction materials, especially because there are so many different vendors and providers and different devices, the idea that leaders must coordinate, align to the data standards, and then really through your RFPs as well as your purchasing process, you can insist that there are data standards so that the tools and resources are able to connect with one another. I just highlighted about the importance of student data privacy so that whoever has access to your students' data, you are able to mandate rules and regulations around their privacy. And then finally, there are federal funds available to support the implementation of digital learning opportunities and specifically digital instructional materials, to both Title IVA, which does have the option for that, as well as Title IIA, which is supporting effective educators, but through that you can support effective instructional materials and innovative technologies. So I just wanted to highlight that. So I know there were a few questions, but I want to make sure we get to our guests. So today, as I mentioned, Elizabeth James, who will be coming on via her webcam in just a moment, is the Curricular Materials Coordinator at the Idaho State Department of Education. She worked as an elementary school teacher and a counselor in Montana, and she has her master's degree from UNLV. So she is focused that master's degree on curriculum and instruction with technology integration. And we're excited to have her share more about Idaho today.
Thanks, Christine. Hi, everybody. I'm excited to share with you a little bit about Idaho. And I'm going to start by giving you kind of a snapshot of our state. We are a very small rural state, servicing roughly 300,000 students. Almost 50% of our 117 LEAs service 50 to 500 students. So this kind of gives you a snapshot of what we're working with in Idaho as far as our student population and our extreme rural state. I'm going to start off kind of by sharing what our curricular review process provides our districts and students. We do provide a continuous review and evaluation of curricular materials in Idaho. We are on a six-year rotating schedule, which means we review each content every 6 years. This does seem to cause an issue when we're talking about digital materials and making sure that we are keeping up to date with those ever-changing materials. Christine mentioned before that many states are local control states, and Idaho is one of those. Our districts and schools are not mandated to choose materials that have gone through our review process, but we do offer that as a service to our districts. All of the material and Idaho educator evaluations are available to districts and schools to use as they go through their local processes. Idaho is also a multiple adoption state, which means that we review and can recommend a number of materials from a variety of publishing companies, and we hope that this choice in material is beneficial to schools as they're trying to make their selections. Once materials are approved and contracts are executed with publishing companies, that ensures equal availability and contracted pricing. This especially helps our large population of rural schools, making sure that they are receiving the same goods, the same pricing, and availability as the few larger districts in Idaho. Idaho also has 7 regional centers where teachers, parents, other stakeholders can go and view all or any of the approved curricular material titles to help them either just become familiar with what is out there or when they're making their own decisions at the local level. I'll dive in a little bit deeper. Curricular materials in Idaho are defined as textbooks and instructional media, including software, audiovisual media, and internet resources. Our process does have its basis in Idaho code and is defined further in administrative rule of our state board. Materials in Idaho are first screened for alignment to Idaho content standards, and then also pedagogical design, accessibility, fair representation, etc. Idaho does work the review process through a 2-part process. This changed 5 or so years ago when we decided that we weren't giving our review team enough time to come up with a very thorough evaluation, or at least as thorough and in-depth as we had wanted. That week that we were supplying them just wasn't enough. So we initiated this 2-part review process, starting with the remote review. Materials are directly shipped to our review team, where they have 2 or 3 months to become familiar with materials, start their independent evaluation, and just kind of have a chance to dive in a little bit deeper. We then do still meet for that week. We call it our consensus review, where partners are able to come together, compare notes and findings, and then provide one final evaluation and recommendation. Those recommendations are finalized by our State Board of Education, and once that is done, then the local review process can begin, and our local districts are then at that time able to choose things that work best with their population and their philosophy. And again, this doesn't have to be something that is on the list. Our school districts in Idaho do have that local control of choosing materials that work best for them. Just before this webinar, I had sent out a questionnaire to our curriculum directors, and here in Idaho, curriculum director often means superintendent or principal or somebody who holds many other hats, so they are extremely busy. I did get a small response, but even though this is a small picture of digital use in Idaho, I think it'll give us some good insight. 17 out of 18 responses are using some form of digital material in the classroom, which isn't hard to believe. I think most people, most educators are doing that now. We're still working on creating policies around that procurement at the local level in Idaho as far as choice, teacher implementation, support, and professional development. And there really hasn't been much pushback in Idaho regarding this shift to digital. There have been a few cases where, you know, it is hard for teachers to make that transition, but overall, they're working hard to do that. On the right-hand side of this slide, you'll see that the responses and feedback for what types of digital materials are being most used in Idaho schools. And first and foremost, people are using textbooks with print and digital platforms. There are still a lot of teachers in districts that are trying to find resources at no cost because there isn't a lot of funding. And in Idaho, there is not any designated funding for print or digital instructional materials. So that is a big one here. We do have a lot of districts moving to OER, and then there are still a few that are just purchasing on an individual basis based on need and want. This next slide illustrates some of the issues and concerns that Idaho districts are having with the implementation of digital materials, and I really don't think that we are probably alone in these issues. One of the strongest or issue that is facing Idaho districts and educators, their quality training and support. Oftentimes, this isn't specific just to digital, but we buy new instructional materials and then don't often have the funds to really provide that intense training that is needed, and then the ongoing support that teachers also need. Of course, having the technology, not necessarily just any device, but making sure that your device meets the needs of the digital materials that you're putting out there for your students. Again, Idaho is an extremely rural state, so access in our rural buildings is a major issue, along with the upgrades needed for bandwidth and Wi-Fi. Safety, security, expensive licensing, some teacher resistance, and staying current are all other issues that our districts and schools are facing. And of course, the equity outside of school. So are these students being able to take this work home is a big deal. Here in Idaho, we are putting together a curriculum think tank where we will meet with curriculum directors from across the state to definitely try and address some of these issues and what we can do at the state level to better help them. Also, just updating our process as a whole. As I had mentioned before, we're working on a 6-year rotating cycle, which the way things are moving now doesn't always allow us to keep up to date information on our lists. Our technology services team is also working very hard to make sure that our access in our rural buildings and our upgrades to hardware and things like that are also met. So even though we do have some issues and restrictions in Idaho, our districts and schools are really rising to the challenge here. And I wanted to share a few exemplars. I know these aren't all of them, but they do give you kind of a glimpse of some good things that are going on in Idaho. In Casha, they have implemented a core tech team to help with specific professional development and ongoing training for the digital materials that they're using. In Blaine County, they're working with cable companies to offer discounts to families who sign up for internet. And this definitely helps that equity piece as far as at school and at home. They also have a strong one-to-one program. In Snake River, they have purchased 10 Wi-Fi hotspots, again, to help with that equity piece from school to home. In Coeur d'Alene, they've developed 6 through 12 science textbooks and are working on different content areas for OER. And Rolling Hills Charter has a strong one-to-one project going in grades 5 through 7, and they're adding additional grade levels. Rick Kennedy here at the Idaho SDE is working with 215 schools and reaching 20,000 students through the Microsoft Imagine Academy and the Create Idaho Adobe pilot, which is a pretty awesome work. And the Pocatello and Chubbuck school districts are utilizing technology training specialists who then provide assistance to school level tech coaches with PD and ongoing training. So those are just a few examples of some good work that people in Idaho are doing. And that's just a quick overview of the Idaho process. there is tons more information about work that's going on here on the curricular materials webpage. The link is on that slide. And of course, I'm happy to answer any questions anybody might have about Idaho's process. So thanks for giving me the time today.
Hey, Elizabeth, thank you. This is Christine. And I had one question, and I may have missed it, but do you have an idea of the percentage of the districts that leverage the lists and the vetted materials that you provide?
We don't at this time. That's something that we're going to try and work through on our curriculum think tank. I know there's another state who, and it's escaping me at this time, but they've created a kind of a living document. Of course, it's optional, but people can report information like that. And so we're hoping to maybe start something like that in Idaho as well, so we have that information.
Great. So I want to thank you, and we'll get some other questions to you at the end. So there's awesome. A few things that I've tagged in. So next, we're just going to have another quick poll to have a chat question, really, not a poll. But as we transition to our next guest, we'd love to hear from you of what your go-to digital learning resources are. So I know people have been posting some things, and they've also been highlighting some of the areas that are a challenge. When you think about where you go to find resources, we hope you're going beyond the search engine and reviewing vetted materials, whether provided by your state or someone just put CK-12 Flexbooks and some of the open ed resources. So we'd love to hear from you. And I would like to invite our next guest, Dr. Bart Rocco, who is from Elizabeth Forward School District in Pennsylvania. And as a reminder, as you post your favorite resources, you will have access to the chat later, and this is a great way to kind of gather new ideas of where places you can access resources for whether your classroom or your school. Yeah. One question that I had is how you mentioned another state was potentially collecting data on their districts. How do you work with other states, or how are you able to connect with other states to maybe revise your review process or learn from others or share what you're doing?
Yes, so Idaho is part of CIMRA, who you mentioned earlier in the presentation, and we all work very closely together as far as connecting policies, just chatting about procurement options and policies regarding instructional materials. As far as, and that's about it as far as reaching out through the states. I've met some people through CETA and actually EdWeb where we get ideas, but CIMRA is pretty much my main go-to as far as collaboration.
And there's about 20 states in there, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I appreciated you sharing some of the things the districts are doing. One was the fact that sending I'll finish this question just quickly, was sending hotspots home. So you're trying to provide that equity, the same access in and out of school. Do you see that as a trend across Idaho, or is that one district kind of leading the way here?
I think they're leading the way. It was the first time that I heard about it, and I thought it was such a cool idea. So I wanted to highlight that. And I also thought it was awesome trying to work with your local cable companies to try and help families too with any discount. We all know that it can be a costly expenditure. Two awesome examples.
Okay. Great. And it looks like, appreciate you coming back on. It looks like Bart is here and ready. So I'll just introduce him briefly. As you can see from his extensive resume here, he is an experienced leader. And his school district is one of Digital Promise's League of Innovative Schools, which is definitely an honor, and they've been highlighted through them. They are also a Future Ready district. And if you're not familiar with Future Ready, that is a great service, and their resources are available online to superintendents. So if you're not the superintendent, but you might want to connect them with some of those resources, and I'll ask someone on my team to put that in the chat. Specifically under Dr. Rocco's leadership, their school has really transformed into this digital learning environment, but also through partnerships. And I think that public-private, as well as this higher ed K-12 partnerships is so valuable. I'm eager to learn more details about that. Dr. Rocco also has received multiple honors, including some from his own school district, COSIN, as well as the University of Pittsburgh. And finally, he does have his doctorate from the University of Pittsburgh. So we're happy to have you here. We appreciate you pulling away from a busy end of the year activities, and we're looking forward to learning about your school and schools and district.
Thank you. And I hope everyone can hear me okay. It's what's been a crazy day is in schools, if you're teachers or superintendents or educational leaders out there. So the bad news is the girls softball team lost 5-4. So that was a heartbreaker today. But I want to talk to you a little bit about how we've transformed the Elizabeth Forward School District. But I thought I'd start with, first of all, by talking about the makeup of the district. So we're a traditional public school. We're located southeastern Pennsylvania. We're a member of the League of Innovative Schools, as Christine said. We have Apple Distinguished. We've been recognized by Apple for our Distinguished program, but also our high school this past year was just recognized as an Apple Distinguished School. We're also a Common Sense Media District, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. About 5 years ago, we started a one-to-one iPad initiative, K-12. We are in the fifth year. Actually, a second recycle of iPads happened 2 years ago. And that process in and of itself sort of drove a lot of the technology, obviously, of where we were in the district. And I'll talk about that as well. We also have a K-12 maker curriculum, but we have two MIT certified fab labs. And we have really transformed the learning of children through those maker, through the maker curriculum, but also through these maker spaces that we have in our district. We've created these learning environments that are designed to create student engagement. And one of the things that I will tell any educational leader, that if you look around your schools and you don't really come out of that idea that schools can't change or they shouldn't change, you need to, because that was really what drove a lot of what we did at Elizabeth Forward to engage children in learning, and was really driven out of the environment of kids. I know we're talking about technology and the issue of procurement of materials, but that was something that was really powerful for us as we moved through this process. We also have some spaces that we've created, and one called the Dream Factory. We have a complete gaming curriculum where we're teaching kids how to build and make games with our that is really structured after a framework from Carnegie Mellon University's Entertainment Technology Center. We partnered with Chevron to create an energy lab that's built around arcade games. And we've also done some work in our middle school around video technologies. But hopefully, if there's any questions, I can answer those a little bit later. So again, we're about 44 miles, square miles, which is a really large area footprint for a school district for in Allegheny County, which is in where we're located. Unlike Idaho, well, we are dense in certain areas, but yet rural in other areas across the state. There are 500 school districts. We are one of 500. And just in my county alone, there are 43 school districts. So we have districts of all varying means that are in that district. My district, we have about 2,350 children. We have about a 40% of the families in my district are economically disadvantaged or low income. We have 18.5% special education. And as you can see there on the screen, we have one high school, one middle school, elementary, two elementaries that are K-5, and then one elementary that's K-2, and the other that's 3-5. And I think the important thing about that is that we are nimble. And, you know, we can move rapidly. We have a lot of flexibility to do that, and that's pretty powerful for us to drive some of these initiatives through our district. So just a little bit about where I think most school districts go, and I talk about this idea of frontier land to future land. You know, 9 years ago when we embarked on this issue around using technology to engage children, we thought of what world kids were in and what our school was like. And, you know, we looked around and, you know, we weren't really looking outside the walls of our schools to change. And I had a very good friend of mine, Dawn Marinelli, who was the Entertainment Technology Center director at that time. And Dawn used the analogy of frontier land to future land. So I can't coin that. But one of the things that Dawn talked about was that his daughter, when she was in school, would, you know, get a book and open the creaky book up and the pages would be ripped and she'd open the desk and it would creak up. And then, you know, she'd have her instruction where the teacher was the focal point of the class. And then she would leave the school building for the day, jump into the Range Rover, put the nav system on, you know, text with her friends, you know, through once she stopped, obviously. But I mean, all the technology was outside of the school and the kids weren't using it. So we thought about our school and we looked at how we could use this one-to-one initiative to engage and use digital materials to support instruction. And that really, that talking to Dawn about what happens and what happened to his daughter sort of changed our thinking about schools. So in our district, again, this is now the fifth year, all of the information that's driven really out is through our LMS. We're using eBackpack. Now, there are other programs out there, systems out there that educators use, Canvas, et cetera, but eBackpack was something that our digital technology integrator team really thought they liked as they reviewed some of these products. And again, I think the advice that I would have would be that, you know, schools have to make choices, but engage staff in that choice, because that really was one of the reasons that we went to the eBackpack. So that does all of our information management and pushing out materials for our kids. We move to online and digital materials now as a standard practice. If we're buying, you know, and that was really hard to change the paradigm for a lot of our staff, because, you know, they were used to hardbound materials and workbooks. But now, because we've been in this cycle, you know, our focus is on how can we create this digital platform for our children. It's by no means, you know, the elementary and the middle school really have made huge strides. High school is still very traditional. It's a traditional faculty to move, but we are moving them. But again, that is an area I think that curricular based or discipline based, they're a little bit, they were at first a little bit more reluctant to move. But everything that we look at now, we look at online, digital materials. That's really critical for us. You know, I say that my great line is that, you know, students have the library in their backpack. That's true. They have more power in that system than, you know, in their backpacks than they would have ever had. So that's really kind of powerful for us. You know, we used to have a curriculum cycle, and, you know, we would go every 3 or 4 years, we would start to evaluate curriculum. We'd have staff look at hardbound materials. We have a review committee. We make recommendations to our board of school directors, and then we would purchase materials. One of the things about digital resources is that now we have instant, you know, we still have a cycle for purchasing, but it's almost instantaneous. We don't have to wait for things to, you know, I can recall even when I was in school, when we were in our science books, you know, 15 years had passed and our science books are old. One of the things about current digital technologies is that materials are fresh, they're current. Kids have access to those materials readily. And we're not living in we're not living in the past. And I think that really changed our thinking about how we select materials. Again, unlike Idaho, I mean, there's no warehouse or storage capacity where the state is dictating. We're really independent. We're doing this on our own and selecting materials on our own. One of the things about this, though, as we've learned, that the use of digital resources is going to change the way kids learn and the way that teachers teach. And I think that we can't be in isolation and talk about that. We can talk about the procurement of materials, whether digital or not, but we certainly have to remember that that's a different way of instruction. Teachers had to let go of the traditional ways that, and the big thing that you really notice is is how they're passing out materials now and how things are being distributed to home and to parents. That's now all online through this eBackpack LMS. So it really has changed the dynamic for our schools and our kids. And of course, there's the footprint, the environmental footprint. I mean, from where we sit, You know, we're saving a tremendous amount of resources, our natural resources, from moving to digital technologies. And from a budgetary standpoint, I still think, you know, the costs are there, but we try to maintain looking at negotiating contracts for some of these purchases of materials in a realistic way so that the costs are prohibitive to our budgetary needs. So what we've done, and, you know, I talk about specific things that we're doing with personalized learning with digital resources. And one is we picked out a couple for the presentation today. One, for example, is our elementary program. We're using eSpark Learning. And eSpark is a company that is really based out of Chicago, San Francisco area, but it is a personalized learning platform for students, and we're using it in grades K to 7 for math and reading enrichment. And how that's really structured is that students are pushed out apps on their iPads based on their area of weaknesses and strengths based on the NWEA MAP assessment tests. Now, why that's important is that these tests are administered to children 3 times a year. So, for example, and to try to make it as quick as possible, we will do an assessment at the beginning of the year, a MAP assessment at the beginning of the year. Children take that test. What eSpark does at that point is they analyze the data for each individual child, and then they push out assignments, our applications, we call them quests, to help those children in those specific areas of deficiency. The teacher manages that through a dashboard, and then the teacher's classroom instruction, the pedagogy, changes because she can work with kids in smaller groups, kids can work on their own apps and to emphasize their strengths or weaknesses, and this happens basically throughout the course of a day. So we are, you know, doing it with consistency and with fidelity, roughly, 30 minutes per day in each subject area. The other thing about that is that we are seeing these results from the NWEA. We do it in the fall, we do it in the wintertime, and then we do the final assessment in the spring. We've seen tremendous gains for our student through this personalized learning platform. The other one that we're using in our ELA program, English Language Arts, is Frontier, which is a writing-based curriculum that's really built around student choice and voice. So students can select subject areas that they're interested in, and then they can, from those materials, create writing assignments based on their interests. It's a fascinating program, really based on something that eSpark has put out as another one of their products. I'm not saying that's the only one we use, but it's really been powerful for our middle school. And then we're using ABC CLIO database for social studies in high school. So, you know, we're using current information about social studies for our kids that I think has really made a difference in the way children view the subject area. And it is powerful for our teachers because it's the most recent data for our kids. Again, another really good couple good sources that are out there. But again, it's not, we have this digital technology team that meets and discusses these resources. They basically vet them. We talk about what strengths and weaknesses about them. And that's how our district, like I said, it's small and it's kind of nimble. We can move that way. Those are just some things that I wanted to share with you. I know that there are certainly some other information, but I've included my contract information and it's right there.
I'm just wondering, it sounds like a lot of the resources you use are subscription-based, and so you talked about your budget. Do you feel that when you transitioned your budget from the hard textbooks to the subscription-based, you really ended up with a lateral move, including, and then also, I don't know if you provide the devices or it's, I can't remember if it's BYOD. Yeah.
No, we do provide the devices for the students. So that was and one of the things that we did that was a creative way of doing that was that we actually leased the products, and then Apple products were kind of unique in that if we lease them and then we sell them back, they retain value immensely. So that was a way for us to certainly get more value, get more money out of our resources. So that was one thing that we did. The second thing, right now, I'm not sure that there is a reduction in costs or savings. Certainly, it has helped us a bit. And I think you know, because you're still going to have expenses for some of these online platforms that you use. And I think book companies and that support these services realize that a lot of schools are going to digital technology platforms and certainly realize that those costs are going to be there. I would say if someone said to me, what's it going to look like in 5 years? I don't see how schools can't have children with some type of one iPad device or some type of technology device with them. It's just that would be my prediction.
And then I have another question you for the districts, and there's teachers on saying, well, how can we do some of these things in our district? There's some specific program questions for you I'll put in the chat, but sure. More globally, unfortunately, there are a ton of districts out there that are really just starting at ground zero, even at this point in 2018. You know, what would be your one piece of advice? They want to transition to digital. They might have pretty restrained budgets.
I think number one, I mean, you have to make certain, I mean, initially that the infrastructure is ready to deal with this, with technology in that regard. I mean, so, you know, our wireless network, our WAM, you know, our WAPs and everything, we're really, you know, we were in place for that. We had our wide area network set up. And I think our database, our framework for that was, you know, our infrastructure was really prepared for that. We wouldn't have been able to do that. I think that's number one. Number two, look at creative ways. And I always say it's little bits. Take small steps into doing something, whether it's just, you know, try a grade level, integrate a grade level first. I mean, the reason that we went to this K-12 initiative was we had about almost 3,500 devices in the school before we went. They were all different types. But I think if you look at the resources that you have out there, you probably are more than likely able to do what you do if you just do it in a different way. I mean, taking the money from our equipment budget and doing it as a lease was a really unique way of maintaining those budgets. And, you know, right now it's a line item. So it was a way for us to maintain those things. But I think it's just, again, it really drives to that idea of looking outside your school and your district in a little bit different way.
Yeah, and I think when you highlighted the importance of changing the teaching practice, so with all of the interactive things that providing and the students creating content, we're really talking about more of a shift of philosophy and instruction, and that these tools are helping you make that happen, which is a great way to look at it. And I think that's where the difference comes in when someone's just trying to, okay, well, we need a new math curriculum, so we're going to get a digital one. Right. And it may be a glorified PDF of your old book.
And again, I would agree. And I think also, you know, we've done a lot of work around micro-credentialing with our staff, you know, using SAMR, the SAMR model, and that, you know, this is not just simply substituting information from a worksheet into the iPad. You know, we want to see augmentation. We want to see kids taking these digital technologies, creating activities with them in a different framework, because we do have the capability of that. So we have kids creating stopgap animation. We have kids taking, you know, projects that where they're either using, you know, interviews or recording information to support their learning, and using other resources as well to support that.
Great. So Elizabeth, it'd be great if you can come back on, because there's a couple questions that you can address as well. I know Bart mentioned that Pennsylvania actually does not have a review process or a portal or a resource repository. So the districts are truly on their own. Based on CEDA's analysis, there are actually only 3 states now that require, if they have a review process, which there's 19 states that have one, only 3 of them require districts to purchase items off of that. So Elizabeth, I wanted to ask you, is that the trend? Have you seen that shift over the last several years? As far as I know, right now Nevada's in a transition, and it was Idaho at one time a requirement, and now you've transitioned to optional?
Yes, they made that transition several years ago. And I know at that point, when it was a requirement, there were specific allocated funds for curricular material purchasing. And when that went away, so did the funds tied to those. But now they have their local choice.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is similar in other places where when the funding went and the requirement went, but in many cases, the states have kept the process in place, providing that service. As you mentioned, you have so many small districts, it would be pretty cumbersome for them to review content on a regular basis. We're just coming up to the top of the hour. There was a question about how to vet quality materials. I know my colleague Rachel Jones put in the chat, CETA does host the quality, the Guide to Quality Instructional Materials. And in that, we have links to multiple rubrics on, as well as resources that CIMRA, the State Instructional Materials Review Process, provides. Elizabeth shared a little bit about what you all do. Does Idaho publish your rubrics online, or do you know of other states that do the same?
We do, and I do think a lot of the CIMRA states do also house those materials on their websites. But Idaho's for sure on the curriculum materials webpage that I had included in my slides. And then we also provide Idaho completed evaluation tools as well.
Okay.
So we have.
And I know Canada does that. They have a comprehensive, not only do they publish the review process, they also publish how they've tiered the ranking of different materials. So for Tiffany in New Jersey, hopefully that will be helpful and the links that have been shared. Bart, there's a couple of specific program questions for you in the chat, if you don't mind clicking on the presenter chat, just answering about MIT and EF Gaming, because we're just about out of time. CIMRA stands for Christine in Minnesota, the State Instructional Materials Review Association. And hopefully one of my colleagues can put, or maybe Elizabeth, you could put the link. I know they just changed their URL. If someone has a URL, that would be, oh, there it is. Great. Look, it's like magic. So
there we go.
I know Elizabeth is in the middle of review process. So she took the time to prep for this on a call and plan the slides. And I know Bart is going through the end of the year. He's off site today and he was able to make this work. So I really appreciate all of your time. We look forward to hearing more about your growth and sharing more. And for those of you online today, please check out our new resource, our new Navigating the Digital Shift. CETA put a lot of time and energy into that work, but it's really for the good of the field. So we hope that everyone can leverage some of the examples on both our presenters as well as attendees. Again, thanks to the Gates Foundation as well as the Future Ready Schools for promoting this webinar. And we'll thank our presenters again. And for a reminder, if you want your certificate and you're watching the recording, you do have to go online and take a short quiz. I didn't make it too hard today, so it's just four questions, but you do have to watch the full webinar and then you'll get your certificate. And if you have other questions, please post them in our digital content community. So here's details about that community. So we hope everyone has a wonderful afternoon, evening, depending on where you are. It's the middle of the night, I think, for some people. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.